Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and we are back on the general election trail. Very, very quick bit of housekeeping, guys. Live show. We are doing a general election live special back in our second home in the Wiley Fox on Sunday, the 26th of January. So it's going to be a Sunday night because you know what you can do on a Sunday night? They're not all out canvassing. So guess where they're going to be? We're going to get them on the stage.
Yeah, busy. Look, can't go into this too much. We've had a few patrons sign up this week. Great. Thank you so much. We need more. Sign up. Great. Thanks very much. Tony, over to you.
Martin, 2 days in, we are seeing this has quickly been framed as the homelessness campaign. And the government have politicised a man being scooped up and having life-changing injuries. They've decided that they wanted to say, you know, they used the victim blaming. He was known to homeless services and he was offered accommodation as if this was his fault. He somehow brought this on himself. This language comes from Eileen Gleeson as the director of the DRHE. This comes from Owen Keegan when he says, you know, homelessness is an attractive option. They said, don't give them soup, don't give them tea. Martin, it's tone from the top as well. Clearly, the Taoiseach came across as a man who lacks empathy.
Yeah, also, look, I think you're right, Tony. It's been defined for a lot of people as the homeless election. But if you are a Fine Gael voter, you have seen for the last 9 years people dying homeless on the streets. If you weren't moved by it then, you're not going to be moved by it now. And they're playing to their own audience. They're not trying to win new voters. They're just trying to keep their own base. So we're outraged. We think it's wrong. A lot of people we know think it's really, really wrong. But when it comes to the ballot box, those people who vote for Fine Gael don't vote about what's wrong. They vote about that fiver that's going to be put in their pocket.
There's a lot of people out there who secretly say that they want the climate change addressed, and they say secretly say that they want homelessness resolved. But at the end of the day, when it's between them and the ballot box, they will absolutely put that tick in the X in the box beside the person who says, "I'll give you a fiver a week."
Yeah, of course.
And there's no question. There's a hardcore there, but we need to appeal to a wider audience now. And we've seen something this morning very upsetting about a young woman who passed away tragically in emergency accommodation. We are seeing young mothers taking their lives because they feel hopelessness. They don't measure these statistics because they're uncomfortable. Some of the done individually case studies that are done on this are showing like upsurges in these of 300 to 500% in the levels of young female mothers taking their lives.
Tony, I have experience of people this year. I've helped a couple of people who were homeless. You've no idea how degrading, dehumanizing it is. You have to declare yourself homeless. Not only have you to do it once, you have to do it every single day. You have to go, I'm homeless, I'm homeless, I'm homeless. There is no empathy on the part of those dealing with you from the state. The NGOs are doing their best, but you are in this cycle where you constantly have to say, I'm homeless. And it's embarrassing and it's shameful for people. And it's dehumanizing people. I'm just surprised there isn't more people killing themselves or being hurt or being damaged because it's so damaging.
Well, they are being damaged, and a lot of these people, we won't see the damage for years to come when these children come of age and they've already lived in a traumatic event. I want to go to the huge screw up, and I'm sorry, Paddy, but it was a huge screw up. Paddy Houlihan with his comments that were homophobic. We don't need, there are a lot of things to attack our Taoiseach on. His record speaks for itself, or his lack of success speaks for itself. You don't need to attack race. You don't need to attack sexuality. We certainly can't, and we can't. There's no room for it. There's no room for it in a progressive, liberal society.
No.
And you know what? Actually, I've seen Sinn Féin have issued a statement saying that that it doesn't represent them and that they want him to apologise. I think he should just come out and apologise. We've all said and done things. We're all always on, I'm going to use that awful phrase, we're always on a journey. But you know what? If you're actually in politics, you need to go on that journey very quickly.
Yeah. And I don't want to labour it either, Tony, because it's not something that we're going to labour here. Our issues are all, look, People are all the bloody same. We're just trying to help people. I don't give a shit where you're from, who you are. We're just trying to help people.
Negative campaigning is something we're seeing.
Bound to happen, Tony, and I'm not a disagreeer with it at all. You have to hold people to account for what they have done in the past. That includes everybody. That includes Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, Labour. And I see it's there. But there's no point. Fine Gael are trying this thing. Oh, look, we're only talking about since Varadkar became Taoiseach. You are in your hole talking about since Varadkar became Taoiseach. This goes back to 2011. That's where your record starts. That's where you'll be judged on. And that's where you'll be held accountable on. Maybe not by all presenters. I watched something on TV last night and they had the Minister for Social Welfare on and she wasn't asked a single question about pensions or social welfare at all. And considering that the report came out this week, Social Welfare Cheats Cheat Us All, netted 300,000, the same as a Fine Gael politician fucking double jobbing in the EU got with their full consent.
It seems like we're just focusing on Fine Gael here. And you know what's really disappointing for me is that some of the left have been very slow out of the blocks, in my opinion. There has been very little in terms of, I put up a tweet and I said, any sign of the manifestos? And people said, you know, what are they these days, you know?
Regina told us people don't read manifestos.
Yeah, but if you know, you got to remember, Corbyn came out with this huge manifesto and never said to put them off. Boris Johnson came out with a one pager and more or less just said, get Brexit done over and over. I don't want to get down to that, but if we're going into that, if that's where we are now, and we want to be able to cost these things, show that actually, you know, what's the economics of what it's done. I can understand why Fine Gael wouldn't produce it because their model is just economically insane. You know, like paying 435,000 for units when we can do them for 230 is just mad. $270,000 more than for a HAP tenancy than it would cost to build ourselves.
Tony, you have to look at even broadband and the children's hospital. Let's, you know, when it comes to fiscal responsibility, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are in the same basket.
No, but Fianna Fáil might actually have built some houses in the meantime, but that's neither here nor there. I'm not advocating for either, but what I am saying, Martin, it's really disappointing that I don't see the left coming out with they should have been ready. This election was coming. Okay, I know the other guys have deep pockets, but they're going to have a dynamic campaign. They have this campaign worked out. I mean, they're superimposing images onto other people's lapels and stuff like that. Well, so if they can afford to do that, where the hell is the reaction back?
Well, I did see somebody put up a little clip of Fine Gael TD getting their posters put up with a cherry picker. Now, that takes money, Tony, and it takes finances to be quick off the bat. And Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are better financed than anybody else. So I think they will catch up. And I think it's the last week. It is always the last week. The first 2 weeks, you're saying homelessness now is what people are focused on. 2 weeks from now, that may be very, very different. It may be something completely different.
Well, a campaign is a moving thing. We don't know what events are going to overtake it. We saw the events yesterday of that poor man. We've seen the events this morning. We don't know where this is actually going to go. But what I can tell you is that they're pinning their hopes on, we did okay with Brexit and there are jobs. That will get a certain amount of jobs. You're laughing at me, Martin.
I'm laughing on the Brexit, Tony, because honest to God, you could have put a chicken in a suit and they could have done the same thing. And I'm not saying that's taken away from Leo Varadkar. There isn't an elected representative anywhere in Ireland that wouldn't have handled it exactly the same.
There's a few, but they wouldn't have been. They're not really. There's very few. I'll say very few.
You know, basically all he had to do was put on a seatbelt and sit there. That's all he had to do.
Do you think, as the campaign goes on, I think the smartest thing Fine Gael have done is they've made Pascal Donoghue their director of elections. I think he will come to the fore. I think he will be pushed out front because the simple fact is he has what they call in the States electability. He has electability and he doesn't come across as, what did I call him yesterday? Tish 1000, this unfeeling machine.
Okay, yeah, but I'm going to pick holes in that campaign so far. You can't hide Simon Harris away. You can't hide Murphy away. You cannot hide these people away. So there's no point on bringing on a backbencher or a minister in another field and saying, talk to us about housing. Bring on the housing minister and talk about housing. Bring on the health minister and talk about health. If you're one of these people who are doing the interviews, you're just pissing time away.
I want to go to health very quickly. We're going to do a bit more on health, hopefully, over the next 48 hours, folks, and tune in. It's going to be, we've got some really good people lined up. But there was a comment made by actually Pascal Dunne, who's former advisor, on Twitter. And, you know, he's not linked to Fine Gael on his Twitter feed. He's inextricably linked to Fine Gael. And he referred to Sláinte Care recently as a pretend idea. They don't really care about Sláinte Care, but damned if I'm going to let the other guys get away with coming out and saying, yeah, we're just adopting Sláinte Care, because no one has actually done anything about it. Where's your budget? Where's your costings? Where's your plan? You know, there are radical plans out there. Anthony O'Connor has a great article in the Journal. I'd ask you to go and read it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great piece by Anthony, and it shows what thinking outside the box can do. And it shows that these things are solvable, and solvable quickly.
What we have on this pod today is we're going to have a couple of interviews with first-time candidates. You're going to hear Nessa Horrigan from the Greens, who was a recently elected councillor in Cabra-Glasnevin, and you're going to hear Carly Bailey from the Sock Dems, who has been also the general candidate for Dublin South West. Give them a listen. The mics are open, guys, right? We do this because we're trying to amplify other voices. You can get the information for how do you get in touch with us on patreon.com/tortoiseshack, because let's face it, we need to keep the mics on as well. It's not going to happen without support. But if you support us, we will deliver as much of this as we can. Talk to you all soon. Thank you. We're delighted to be joined on the line by Green Party Dublin Central election candidate. She's well known in this little part of the world as well. Chair of policy and a councillor in Cabra-Glasnevin and a carer to her daughter, Nessa Horrigan. Nessa, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Listen, this is your first run at the general election itself. You were successful recently in the local elections. I would have thought that experience might have put you off going for it. Why are you going for it?
I know, some people have said that to me. I might be a bit mad, and I have 3 kids under 7, so I have my mum up for the next 3 weeks looking after the kids. The local elections was pretty full on, but I suppose I'm going for it because I care about it. I think it's worth doing. I've been home with my kids for a lot of, you know, the last couple of years looking after my little girl who's 7, who has a disability, and I think that kind of radicalized me in a strange way, that all of a sudden the lack of services, the kind of, you know, the quality of life issues that you're dealing with, bringing up kids in the inner city in terms of like air pollution and green space and those kind of things. All of a sudden it's really, you know, it's in your life. It's your everyday reality. Mm. And it does make you just that little bit more, feel more urgent about all of this stuff. So I think it's worth doing. I probably am crazy for doing it, but sure, look, we'll give it a go. And honestly, at this stage, I'm not even worrying about kind of numbers or chances or anything like that. I'm just going to do the work and, you know, talk to people and keep going with, you know, with my policy interests and see how it goes.
Do you think you have an advantage that you've been out there, you've knocked on the doors not so long ago, actually, that you've been knocking on the doors, so you have some facial recognition?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, and we learned that during repeal, is that there's no, there's nothing better than just having conversations with people. And certainly, yeah, look, we knocked on a lot of doors during the locals. I mean, that's 7 or 8 months ago now, so I'm going to be going back, knocking on those doors again and talking to people again and having those same conversations. But I guess the conversations we're going to be having are just on that kind of slightly different scale. You know, we're not talking about what we can do just within our own community. We're talking about what the future of all of our communities should be.
Okay, and is this what you're talking about on the doorsteps? You're steering away from kind of the traditional issues and looking at the long-term picture and what we can do to impact.
Well, there's a bit of both, I guess. I always try and relate the two together because I think that that's the more useful way to develop these things. But I do think that, you know, hopefully this is a climate election, and certainly that whole idea that, you know, governments work from 5 years to 5 years. That doesn't always serve that climate debate very well, because you need really good long-term planning and you need kind of really good investment into the future and a kind of an idea that we have a responsibility to future generations to do well here and make good decisions. But on the other hand, you know, all of us are just living in the real world and living, you know, our own lives with our kids and our job. And so I personally find it pretty easy to relate, you know, issues around kind of the environment or about green policy or about quality of life back to, you know, just the way everybody's living. Like I do a lot of work on accessibility and disability and all of that kind of stuff. But you know what? That at a very basic level comes down to good footpaths and a decent amount of time to cross the road and feeling like your kid is safe when they go outside their house. And that's something everyone can understand.
Nessa, just on the wider issue, you said it's a climate election. It's also going to be, if the last 2 days are anything to go by, a housing election. In terms of you're in Dublin Central, in terms of the housing policy that you guys want to see implemented, you know, can you give us a few of your key points?
Absolutely. Well, look, housing is a key one for us, I guess. We're very much of the belief that you need some serious investment in housing, that we need to move away from that private sector model. And look, in a very kind of immediate way, we've seen that private sector-led model has failed and is failing. And that's not just happening in Ireland. That's happening across, you know, Europe. But we don't seem to have learnt the lesson. So I think that we would like to see real investment in communities, real investment in housing. Our proposed model is always cost rental. So the idea of cost rental is the state builds homes for everybody. You don't buy those homes. Everybody can rent. But it doesn't matter who you are. So somebody like me who was a full-time carer could be, you know, living beside a doctor or a stay-at-home mom or a nurse, or it doesn't really matter. Everybody has the option of long-term, secure, really high quality housing with green space and lots of services that doesn't cost them, you know, 40 or 50 or 60% of their disposable income. You know, it should be possible for everybody to have a roof over their head, but also for that, you know, for those homes to be of a reasonable quality and secured by the state. And I guess ultimately above all of this is that we believe believe in the right to housing.
How do you feel about the tone of the campaign so far and the proposal for just a leaders debate? Do you think that the Greens should be in on that debate as well?
I just think that we don't live in that era anymore. I guess, look, the tone of the debate, as a new politician, I am kind of not massively keen on this particular tone, this kind of quite negative campaigning, and I see most of it honestly coming from Fine Gael of attacking other parties on stuff that, you know, particularly at the moment with the injury to the man in Dublin during the clearance of homeless people's belongings. I just think that is a tone of election that we haven't really seen in Ireland, and I think our democracy is better for not having that particular aspect in the debate. I think that the national broadcaster is still sticking to this idea that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are the only possibility is really retrograde. That is not what the polls show us. That is not what the numbers are telling us. We're moving away from that to a much more pluralist society. And I think that they're going to have to move. They're going to have to update their outlook. And look, the Greens have kind of a legacy issue here is that we were pushed out of debates before, and we brought it to the High Court, and even though we lost, there was a recognition there that between elections, if there's a 5 year or 4 year cycle, a lot can happen, and the national broadcaster really needs to keep up to date with that.
It's a very short campaign, it's a very short window. We're obviously pushing the agenda that there is capacity there in the numbers for some sort of left unity pact, where it's not going to happen pre-election now, that's clear. But if the numbers dictate, will you be personally, because I've seen actually some very good projections of where the Greens could end up with a number of seats. But if you actually factor those number of seats in, there is a coalition that's every bit bigger than either of the main two parties, as they like to be called. Would that be something that you personally would be interested in looking at post-election?
Yeah, Honestly, it would. I think that unlike the other part, unlike Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and I believe Labour, I mean, we will, there's no party that we won't talk to. There's no party that we are not open to, because ultimately, you know, we just want action. We're very just focused on the policy of this and the stuff that we think is important. And it's not really about us and our own party's trajectory. It's about movement here and changing the kind of political outlook. And the reality, I guess, is that many of the parties on the left have far more in common with us than we have with a party like Fine Gael, which are coming with, you know, all the baggage of 9 years in government. So personally, I would be absolutely open to it. And I don't think that that's a particularly kind of niche position to take within the Greens anyway, certainly.
Just to finish up, what have you to say to the people of Dublin Central?
I suppose I'm a relatively new politician and I hope I'm in it for the right reasons. I got into it because all of a sudden I realised that possibly the best way to influence the way I'm living and the way my kids are living and their future is to get into the business of decision making. And I think that we still live in a democracy and we still live in a society where that's possible. I really do think that the next decade is going to have to be transformative for Dublin Central and for all, well, for the country in general, but particularly urban areas. We're going to see a lot of change, whether we like it or not. And it's not too late. You know, we have until 2030 to kind of, you know, move our direction and kind of change the course of where we're going and really take action and have a new green economy. And we could do that. You know, we're a small, dynamic country with lots of natural resources. It's all for the taking for us, but it needs a bit of vision. It needs a bit of bravery. And we have to have some kind of difficult conversations about how we really want to live and how we want to leave things for the next generation. And I think that as much as, you know, you're kind of going out in the cold and knocking on doors and having kind of fairly spicy chats with people sometimes, it's worth it. It's worth doing. It's worth saying that there is another way of governing the country that is a little bit more inclusive, a little bit fairer, and is a little bit greener.
Nessa Horrigan, thank you so much for your time and all the best in the upcoming general election.
Yep, keep
Thanks
going.
Thanks very much, guys.
We're delighted to be joined on the line by Councillor Carly Bailey, who is the Soc Dems candidate for Dublin South West. Carly, we've met before, and you have a very interesting backstory. But you know, you're a councillor now. Would you not have really, genuinely, I've said this before, but why would you keep on pursuing this political ambition?
That's a fair question, in fairness, Tony. Why? I guess because things aren't changing and they don't look like they're going to change anytime soon. And I have two children at home, and I guess I said that to you before, like, you know, we lost everything in the crash and I now have nothing really to leave my children. And I guess I think the only way I have anything to offer them and anything to leave them as a legacy or anything is to try and bring some change about and try and make sure that their future is going to be a hell of a lot better and more decent than ours is currently.
Yeah, when you say you lost everything, you really did lose everything. You lost your home, and you guys were the actual at the front of this. What we're supposed to believe it didn't happen, but of course you did. You dealt with a vulture fund. You're a councillor now. You're going back out onto the streets, and you're asking people to vote for you. Why should they vote for you?
Okay, well, a couple of things with it. So I really love being a councillor, actually. I never thought I'd actually say that because I was very hesitant. You know, there's negative connotations around that word councillor, like for obvious reasons. So it's actually really surprised me, taking me back, actually. I've really enjoyed working for my local community in that way. But I'll be really honest with you, the bulk of the work that's coming across my desk, whether it's on phones or whether I'm meeting people or whatever, it's on housing issues, it's on health issues, it's on access to public services issues, all issues that I can't deal with as a councillor, that I don't have any authority or any real sway. I have a little bit, but I don't have enough. And, you know, I'm convinced that with everything that I've done over the last number of years, I mean, I sent myself back to school, I have studied law, I've studied policy, I have done everything I can to basically understand how this could happen, not just to me, but to so many other people, and how we can try and make this better and what we need to do to be able to do that. So I think I can bring a lot to the table. I have obviously my own personal experience and obviously so many other people that I know, you know, my own family, my friends, and there's not too many of us haven't been affected. But I also bring that sort of wealth of knowledge that I have gained over the last 6 years that I really do think I can make a change and I can make a difference and I can make policy better.
The Taoiseach has come out today and said he's surprised that people aren't asking about Brexit. Are you getting much questions about Brexit on the doors?
No, would be the reality of that. Not really. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm as assured as anybody else as to how important Brexit is to the country. I think, though, the reality is that when it's not something that you can see or feel right now, this moment, it perhaps doesn't feel quite as present as, say, you know, the housing crisis and the healthcare crisis and all the other crises that we've got literally right in front of us. You know, we feel like everything is on fire around us, basically, and it seems like Brexit seems like a distant thing at this point to most people. Now, it's different for me. I grew up on the border, so it's very much present, say, in my own local community back home. Because we're right on the border. But for the most part, no, like, I think people do understand it's an important issue. It's not that they don't understand that, but I think the way it's going is there's just so many other things that are really ever present right now, right this minute, knocking on their door that they need to get sorted or want to get sorted, you know?
I don't think it's fair either for Fine Gael to claim ownership of it when it's cross-party. Everybody agrees with the approach.
Oh, absolutely. Look at every single person, whether they're in the Dáil or in the councils or around the country, every person understands that. But for only Brexit as a reason, we would have had a general election much, much, much sooner by now. I mean, with all the different scandals that have gone over the last couple of years. But to be fair, every single person in that Dáil has really put the national interest first. So no, I don't think any one person can absolutely claim credit for that. And you know, I think there's been a point at which, though, I think this should have come much sooner, actually. I think this general election, the Brexit, it became an excuse, I think, you know. And I think at some point it became very much more unacceptable to be able to tolerate what we've been having to put up with for it. But here we are. It's here now.
We've seen the last 36 hours, some awful events with a man with life-changing injuries removed from his tent was removed at the Grand Canal. And we see this morning a young woman who's died tragically in emergency accommodation. And you've spoken already, several times you've mentioned housing and homelessness been mentioned. Is this going to be the housing election?
Well, look, I certainly hope so. Certainly from what we're hearing on the doors, housing is definitely a huge issue. Homelessness now, I really hope, also becomes to the fore of that, because the housing crisis affects so many different people, and you know, people who are having to decide whether they're going to sleep in a tent or sleep in an emergency hostel, they're one part of that and don't get enough prominence, really. Well, they wouldn't if we've got so many homeless people and families and emergency accommodation, you know. So I really do hope so. I mean, part of the reason why I got involved in activism at all before ever I joined a political party or anything like that was because of what was going on and how it wasn't being discussed. Housing and the crisis and all the different moving parts, none of it was being discussed. None of it was being talked about. It was never in the news. And it's where I began to talk about our experiences. Because not because I want to be able to put my personal life story out there. Believe me, I can't even begin to describe how uncomfortable that makes me feel. And anybody who knows me knows that I'm not the kind of person who likes to put myself out front and centre. But I understood that in order to try and get this onto the agenda, more and more of us would need to speak up and speak out and do more to try and get there. So whatever happens after this general election, as far as I'm concerned, I'm very, very happy that I, in my very small way, contributed to getting housing as an election issue. And it is going to be an election issue. There's no two ways about that. There's barely a person in Dublin South West or any part of the country, really, at this stage, who isn't impacted by the housing crisis in some way.
Tone of the debate so far, Carly, are you happy that it's going to be a heads-up Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael leadership debate?
It's presidential, isn't it? Look, I mean, there's only so much, I guess, influence you can have in terms of how the debate is going to be framed. You know, this is how the media are reporting it, and I'm sure the two parties are very happy to have the focus both on the two of those people in particular. I'm hearing one of the political correspondents who were talking about it today, how they thought it was very strange that either press conferences that the big parties had today, it was a very relaxed atmosphere, almost like any other kind of a press conference, not like how you'd feel at the start of a general election campaign would be fairly tense or exciting or energised. Not feeling that at all. I think that's very, very strange. And I think for them, it obviously feels like it's a foregone conclusion for either one. And they're very assured. You can even tell by their poster designs and stuff like that, you know. There's a kind of, I don't know, a level of arrogance about it. Mm. But I'm very hopeful that the people have had enough and are looking to change that now.
Well, that brings us on to one of our last questions, which is...
It's a nice segue there, wasn't it?
Yeah, it worked perfectly because we've spoken, I don't know if you listened to recently, a plug for our podcast with João Pina from the Portuguese Socialist Party, and he spoke about how after the election, the last in 2014, that they thought, you know, and the media were indeed, you know, saying, oh, well, the coalition talks will start tomorrow between this centre-right bloc and the Socialist Party. And it took a tweet from someone in the Communist Party to say, what are they on about? If we join with them, we actually can form a unity, left unity government. And they did. How are you feeling in terms of if we get enough of an outcome that there's enough seats there that the Soc Dems themselves are willing to talk to other parties of the left?
Absolutely. I mean, we know that is our absolute preference. We want to see a left alliance. We'd love to be able to see a different kind of government formation in this country. And I know I'm not alone in that. And irrespective of which party preference you have on the left, I think all of us are absolutely assured of that fact. You know, we want to be able to have something different, an alternative to this 100 years, it's one or the other, and where are we and what have we got for it? And if we keep voting for that same thing, as I keep saying, you know, you can't keep expecting something different every single time. It doesn't happen like that. So yeah, we'll see what the numbers and we'll see what way it falls afterwards, and let's be really hopeful about that. It'd be fantastic, wouldn't it?
It would.
And do you have any specific message for your constituency of Dublin Southwest?
Yeah, look, I've been speaking to a good few people already around the place, and you know, I suppose I would have done a lot of work there during the repeal campaign and sort of school campaigns and all the rest of it. But obviously, we'll be getting out to talk to more and more people over the next couple of weeks or whatever. Look, all I really have to say is that, I said at the beginning, I have genuinely dedicated the last number of years of my life to really figuring out and getting to the grips with all of this stuff. Because, you know, a lot of the time, some of these issues are quite complex. Some of them are more simple than they would say. But a lot of the time, there is a lot of moving parts with it. I've really gone into detail and depth in trying to figure out, you know, what would we need to do to make that better? How could that happen? What impact would that have? What cost might that be? How would we mitigate that? All of those things. I think I could be a really, really good legislator. And I mean, essentially a TD, that is what they're trying to do. They're trying to create law, or they're trying to amend the law that's being proposed to make it better, so it's less bad in lots of different facets. And then obviously you're representing the constituency itself, and I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of constituencies where we've all got pretty similar problems, whether it's housing and healthcare, childcare costs, public transport and gridlock and all the rest of it. And so we're not any much different to anywhere else. But Dublin South West, I genuinely, like, it's such a really broad constituency. You're talking about people in City West, you're talking about people in Talla, you're talking about people in Rathfarnham and Temple Oak. It's really diverse, but like, deadly people, really, really lovely, genuine people. And I mean, I haven't lived here all my life. My husband's from here, obviously. But when I did come here and I was on my knees and we were pretty broken after losing the house and all of that, I can't even begin to describe how amazing everybody was and how supportive and how much they gave back to me and how they didn't make me feel smaller than I already did. In fact, they helped build me back up. So I have a lot to give. I have a lot to offer the people of Dublin South West. I want to put us first, and I want to make sure, and that's where I'm coming from, I don't want anyone left behind, because it's not right.
Charlie Bailey, that is a lovely way to finish off this conversation.
Thank you.
All the best to you.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Not at all.
Listen, folks, I hope you enjoyed those two conversations. We're hoping to do some more. If you are into this, there's going to be a great live show on January 26th in the Wiley Fox, Dublin City Centre, Eden Quay. We're all going to be there. If we can get Martin there, we'll somehow drag him there.
I'll be there.
Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.